Glad to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and today we deal with aches, pains, sprains, and strains, and recovering from them with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and her sister, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, who is a faculty associate at the UW Medical School, filling in for the suffering Bill Boisenhold.
Somehow I have this picture of Bill sitting at a little cafe in Italy.
Drinking some great coffee.
Have a coffee and a biscotti or something like that. Yeah. There better be something in it for us.
Well, I had a good time over the holiday break. We went to Disney in Orlando.
Oh, that's right.
9 days there. Mm-hmm. And I put a pedometer on just to see.
Oh.
And did about 16,000 steps a day.
That's good really for good. You.
So that was like, I did the math on that. It was like about walking three marathons in 9 days. So,
holy cow.
With Mickey?
Well, a lot of it carrying daughter Emily.
Oh, yeah.
So I had a few aches after that.
Oh, I'm sure you did. And people sometimes don't think about all the walking they do when they take a trip compared to their usual level of walking, especially when you go from a climate like this where you've been fairly sedentary perhaps for a couple months or and then you go someplace like that and you do a lot of walking and your body's just not used to it. So any change like that, you can expect you're probably going to be a little bit sore afterwards. Try to pace yourself and on and try to do pushing. Push her in a stroller instead of carrying.
Well, we did a lot of that too. But when you're waiting in line to get on rides and all that business, then it's, all carry.
Well, that's the other component, too, is the static standing. Just standing in lines for a long period of time is also really hard on your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I felt it, but I'm better.
And how long did it take you to recover?
Oh, probably about a week.
Mm-hmm.
About a week.
And did you modify your activities here? Or when you got back or over that week to
Well, then
to
I was into
compensate.
Snow shoveling and that sort of business. So,
wow. So then you got some different aches and pains.
Yeah, I got a few different ones. I have one or two from this weekend shoveling, that's for sure. Well, Gene in Menominee probably has something more interesting to talk about than my trip.
Than Larry's aches and pains and Larry's vacations.
Let's go to Gene. Gene, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I was wondering what they would recommend for shin splints.
Ah, you know, my wife has that problem, too, where they're running.
It's fairly common. Gene, how can you tell us a little bit about your activity level or what brings on your symptoms?
Running.
Running.
Oh. Well, interesting. Is this, have you have a change in your running?
No.
Is it one leg or both?
Right now, it's just one.
Okay. Because the questions we ask ourselves when we're talking to people like you is, why now? What has changed? Why one leg and not the other? And why this person and not somebody else? So,
well, one of the things, I mean, the ground's now frozen, so it's harder. And also you tend to do more road running as opposed to off-road running, which is a softer surface.
Sure.
I love when people answer their own questions.
You're doing great. Good job.
And what would you do to treat yourself, Gene?
That's the question. I can't remember what I did before other than stop running.
Well, I think you really assessed yourself well. Running on a soft surface is much more forgivable than running on hard concrete. And you also mentioned the banked road, which is also a factor. So you're running on a road which usually has some sort of domage to it. And, you know, to take a few steps on that dome is fine, but to run repeatedly on that is very hard on your legs.
So that's probably how you got there, which answers a big part of our question. Can you find another place to run that was going to reduce those stresses? Then, that being said, I would make sure I had really good shoes. This is one of those cases where you're either going to have to cut back on your running, you're going to have to do something different to change the forces on your feet. So, whereas in the summer you might be able to get away with shoes that are a little bit worn, have a few miles on them, in the winter, because the road is less forgiving, you're going to need to have shoes that are in really good shape. You may need to have a couple pair and trade them off. You may need to mix in your running with some other kinds of activities.
Snowshoeing?
Yes, snowshoeing, cross-country skiing.
We can send you some.
Yeah.
We have plenty
We
here.
Have a bunch. Come down and visit. It's lovely down here now. But in the meantime, stretch your calves. ice your shins. If you can find a different place to run that's more level, maybe on a track or a trail one day, or if you can, you know, run on a sidewalk that doesn't have at least the cant to it, you might be better off. You can also look at arch supports. You usually get shin splints because some of the muscles in your feet that attach up in your shin are working really hard to grip the surface. So sometimes an arch support can help take some of the load off those muscles.
I think the life expectancy of a pair of running shoes is about 400 miles.
Yeah.
And if they get wet, my understanding is that life expectancy decreases. And I know a lot of people don't want to buy new running shoes in the winter because you don't want to get them wet and dirty and things like that. But as Lori mentioned, I think that's this is an important time to make sure you have good support.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a case in point. Last year, I bought some winter running shoes that were less expensive. And I took them, and when I bought them, I thought, oh, these feel kind of stiff. These could give me some nasty Achilles tendonitis. But I thought, oh, they're for the winter. It won't be so bad. Oh, man.
Bad
Achilles tendonitis, both ankles. Took me a long time to get over it. So it's worth the investment in a good pair of running shoes.
Good luck. Thanks for calling. Oh, Gene, appreciate your call. Brenna in Ripon, it's your turn. Hi, Brenna.
Well, good morning, Larry. Appreciate your show, as always, and public radio.
Thank you.
I am calling because in October, I'm an instructional aide at an elementary school, and in October on a field trip, I wound up lunging to save a child from falling and ripped my hamstring and the IT muscle, which I never knew existed, and something across the top on my right leg. And we did sort of do nothing, then physical therapy, and then they went from stretching to strengthening. There was no bone damage in the x-rays that they initially took. And then when we moved to the strengthening ones, that just made everything go right back to where it was. There were basically sort of 3 points of no, do not touch, one of which was my sit bone. Like, I can't sit down on that right cheek.
Sure.
Anyway, so then we went MRI and an orthopedic surgeon and got a cortisone shot, steroid shot, which hurt like heck initially, but did make it better. And where I am now, I kind of don't know what to do. I'm for my age, as I've been told. I'm pretty active. I've never been a runner, but I bike and cross-country ski and walk every day. And what I'm finding, the orthopedic surgeon sort of said, well, what do you want to do? Which I didn't quite know how to respond to that. I'm on, so he said, sort of self-monitor. And I find that if I walk 2 miles, it kind of is tender and hurts again. And I just don't know if I should be doing stretching or kind of right now I walk a lot on my job and I try to walk at home. But it can hurt, and I don't know if I've just got weeks before this will get better or if I should be trying to make it better.
What did the MRI show?
It actually showed the bone mass was great, but it showed, like, several areas kind of pulled away, like they veered off the muscle part.
Okay, and that's right at your sit bone?
That was in three different areas, actually.
Okay.
Okay. So do I stretch or do I just do nothing?
I'd continue with the stretching, and I would try a strengthening program again.
Okay.
And it may be that the strengthening program was too vigorous at the beginning.
Okay, kind of small doses then?
Uh-huh.
Right.
Okay.
And
yeah.
I'd probably start with some isometric contractions.
Okay.
And progress to some shortening contractions, and then I would progress from there to lengthening contractions, which tend to load the tendon more.
Okay. All right.
I agree with all of that, and again, primarily because Lori's my older sister.
Hey,
oh, you're just waiting to get that in, weren't you?
I know. Y'all have to listen to your big sister.
But the other thing, Brenna, you said after you did activity that you were sore, and...
Yeah.
And are you as sore as, do you go back to kind of square one to your baseline, or is it just a little sore and, oh, in, you know, 12 hours I'm better? How sore is sore for you?
It can not quite square one, but
okay.
For example, I will spend my workday then sitting on an ice pack when I have
okay.
to sit.
And so that's a gauge that's too much.
Okay.
We would really expect you're basically retraining this muscle, the fibers that are still functioning, to kind of carry the whole load per se. So we would expect a little soreness from activity, but it shouldn't last into the next day, through the next day. You might wake up a little sore,
okay.
but once you get up and get moving, you should kind of return back to your baseline.
Uh-huh.
So something that makes you so sore that you're, sitting on an ice pack the next day, I would say is too aggressive.
Okay.
Yeah, and you have to think of exercise in terms of a dose, just like you do a medication. Two aspirin is great, but, 10 will make you really sick. You have to think of dosing exercise the same way, except you also have to factor in how active you are in your regular daily activities as part of that dose.
Okay.
So think about it.
23 5-year-old, what does that
mean?
Oh,
jeez.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh.
Sideways.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah. My heart goes out to you.
Yeah. Oh, it's delightful. It's the most joyful thing I've ever done.
Oh, well, good for you.
Really, I don't have to freak out, because I was thinking by being inactive, atrophy or something, and then if you baby it, you sort of maybe are throwing your whole body off.
No. I think you're taking care of 23 kids along with some really specific directed exercises that hopefully a physical therapist can manage for you. And someone like you, the dosage is really hard to get a handle on. So
yes,
you have to keep tabs on that. But Jill is absolutely right. You've got to keep it down to low levels, because every time you go through that cycle of over-exercise and inflammation, you damage that tendon further.
Okay, I really have to think easy does.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kid gloves.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay, good luck.
Good luck.
Yeah, with those 23 children.
Yeah. I've got about 23 college students in my class.
And, be very careful, Larry.
There's not a lot of up and down and sideways.
That's true. That's true.
With that crowd. At least I hope. Shirley and Prentice, it's your turn. Hi, Shirley.
Hello, Larry. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 86 years old and in relatively good health, but since last March, I've had a very, very painful neck on the left side. The MRI showed severe arthritis, and later they told me they didn't take a second one, but I didn't know about the herniated disc until they mentioned it later. Now I'm stiff in my shoulders, raising my arms. I used to walk a lot. Mm-hmm. I live in the woods,
mm-hmm.
but in the winter, I'm not doing much of that. Mm-hmm. I do wear these cleated, that's what I call them, rubber things
Good
I slip over.
Good
yeah.
for you.
Yeah, and I use ski poles and take the dogs, and out mm-hmm. we go. But then most of the exercise I do is just going up and down the steps. It's a mm-hmm. circular stairway mm-hmm. where I can hang onto the rail easily, mm-hmm. rails on either side. I've taken oxycodone. It's the only thing that is, those painkillers are mm-hmm. is all that helps. They are now trying a Duragesic patch.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure, yep.
And have doubled that to 2 patches every 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is helping a little. It didn't help at all with the 1 patch.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can hear I wear a neck collar. I just can't seem to not wear a neck collar, a soft one, and mm-hmm. that does help. But I hear the grinding in my neck on the, when I guess it's bone on bone. I don't know. That isn't so terribly painful when it does that, but it is not. Now right now, sitting rather still in the chair here, it's as if I get a cramp up, and mm-hmm. I have to move very slowly
right.
to get that loose.
Right.
Will that ever go away?
Well, the changes, the arthritic changes in your neck will not go away. But what causes the symptoms is the inflammation that occurs as a result of the arthritis and the wear and tear on your joints in there, and those. That swelling and inflammation puts pressure on the nerve roots, and that's what sends that pain out into your shoulder and down your arm.
Right.
Have you seen a physical therapist at all?
Yes, I have, and didn't seem to do any good. I couldn't see that it did any good at all.
Did they give you some exercises to do? Or?
Well, not really. Well, let's see. No, I wouldn't say. There was something I could hook myself up to.
Attraction.
Uh-huh. Thing that would pull up my neck, but I was afraid of that thing.
Okay.
Even though I did try it a couple times.
Okay.
I'm thinking way back, he may have given me some, but just any movement just seems to hurt.
Okay.
Go ahead.
It might be reasonable to go back and see somebody else who has specialization in dealing with the spine. It sounds like you have a pretty significant case of arthritis with a lot of symptoms, and a lot of physical therapists have some manual skills. They're called manual therapists, and they can really be helpful in loosening up some of those soft tissues and improving your posture and decreasing your symptoms. So you may want to try a different physical therapist who has some expertise in spine and manual therapy, and see if they can offer you anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, it sounds like these patches are working a little bit for you, Shirley, which is wonderful. And maybe if your pain...
I'm sorry, I missed that one word that you said that is wonderful for me. What was
the patches?
The patches are helping, it sounds like.
Oh, the duragesic patches.
Yes.
I see. Thank you. Yeah.
And if those are helpful and maybe your pain has decreased a little bit, now may be a good time to see a therapist again. You know, if you were in such severe pain the first time you went, they may have been very limited on what they could do for you. So now may be a good time to go back and revisit that whole concept.
Mm-hmm.
Do braces ever help? I know they say, no, we're not going to give you a back brace or anything like that.
Some back braces do. I mean, the soft collar is obviously helping you some. So,
right. I think that's probably the appropriate brace for you.
Good luck, Shirley.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Barb in Madison, we go to you next. Hi, Barbara.
Well, good morning, all of you. I appreciate talking to you. I'm 81, and I feel very healthy, and I go to my health club every day, and I work out in the pool, and I'm trying to keep my muscle tone and my range of motion. I've had my left hip, I've had a hip surgery on my left hip, and so I'm trying not to get it on my right hip. But here's what happens to me occasionally, and I get a Charlie horse, and what can one do to avoid that, and what am I doing that causes that to occur?
Where do you get that Charlie horse?
Oh, you know what? I just had it last week, and it was on my left inner thigh. But it can be on my right leg, too.
Mm-hmm.
And when one gets it, are you supposed to just step down on your foot and massage the area?
Massaging works fine. Some trying to relax and gently stretch the muscle works fine. Those are the best things. You shouldn't try to continue to push through the activity. That would be the wrong thing to do, because that's just going to make that muscle angrier. But the frequent Charlie horses can be caused by a number of things. Looking at your diet to make sure you're sufficiently hydrated. So lack of adequate hydration can impact that. And you might want to talk with your pharmacist or physician, because sometimes your medications can impact your hydration levels or some of the chemical balances in your body. For example, sufficient potassium is linked with... insufficient potassium is linked with muscle cramping. The thing you have to think about is possible circulatory impairments. If you have diabetes or some other type of condition that causes impairment in your circulation, claudication in your lower extremities, sometimes problems with your back can cause cramping because of circulatory insufficiency. So we kind of think about any systemic causes. We think about nutritional imbalances. If it's simply a muscle being overworked and overfatigued, then we stop the activity, let it rest, do some gentle stretching.
Mm-hmm.
So just by eating a banana a day, is that a good thing to increase your...
It's a really good thing to do for a lot of reasons. But a banana a day.
Uh-huh. And actually, I really don't take any medications. And I always have my water bottle in the pool with me.
Good for you.
Do you drink it?
I do. I'm drinking quantities of water. And since I don't take any medications, I just thought, what is causing this? I think something you mentioned, I think I get a little, I do it too strenuously. Is that a factor?
It certainly can be a factor. The other thing to think about, and this is probably not the case for you, but for people out there who are voracious water drinkers, you can hyperhydrate too.
Mm-hmm.
And you can flush out some of the essential electrolytes in your system.
Mm-hmm.
So more is not always better. Yeah.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it, Barb. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests as we talk about aches, pains, sprains, and strains here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer. Talking with Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, faculty associate at the UW Medical School. Glad to have them with us. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And Sue in Wausau is next. Sue, hello to you.
Hi. 10 years ago when I had my son, they diagnosed it with that I was having problems with sciatica. 10 years later, which was this year, they actually said, no, it has more to do with my back than my sciatica. And it has to do with the hips mostly. They seem to get tight, especially after walking a long time, if I sit for extended periods. Is there anything else a person can do?
What did they decide was wrong with your back? If you had...
I actually had a cortisone shot. It was in the L5 area.
Okay.
And that did help with the nerve that, or the ache and the pain that ran behind my leg. That seems to have dissipated, but now the hips seem to get very stiff.
Okay. A lot of that can still be coming from your back. Have you seen a physical therapist for...
Yes, I have, and I do the exercises. I went for a number of weeks, and she's prescribed a number of exercises to try, and I still keep up with those. I do yoga. I walk on a regular basis.
Okay. Those all sound like good things.
Right.
And are you noticing any improvement in your symptoms?
Somewhat, except I sit a lot for work. I drive most of the time. And then I notice then when I get out, the hips will be really stiff and even the knees.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Do you have a small lumbar support in your car?
Do you
have something?
I do, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, good. And the car seems to be a comfortable fit for you?
Yeah, I have a car that I had on multiple adjustable seats so that I could adjust it to how I wanted to sit.
Great, great. Well, it sounds like you've done about the best you can do under the circumstances, unless you want to think about changing your job. But the vibration of being in a car is really bad for your back. And because you're sitting... and your weight bearing primarily on your hips, all the vibration of the car goes right into your hips and into your low back. It's not like when you're standing where you have shock absorption that occurs from your foot all the way through your legs, knees, et cetera, before it ever gets to your back. All that vibration and load is going right into your hips and low back. So it's a really difficult thing.
Okay.
So given that you spend the better part of your day in a car, you're probably doing fairly well, stopping as frequently as you can, getting out and stretching, especially stretching into extension where you arch your back backwards to in opposition to that constant flex position. It's going to be important.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right.
And just stay active.
Well,
keep your body weight down.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the option.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sue. Thanks for calling. Dave in Middleton, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm a tennis player with tennis elbow.
That's usually what we see it in.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Is it shoveler's elbow?
Well, I think I initially injured it back in the fall when I was raking leaves and picking them up and throwing them over a fence. And I know I was putting an awful lot of strain on my elbow when I was doing that.
Sure.
We throwing them into your neighbor's yard?
Yeah.
And it's coming back to get you. See, it's payback.
So what do you do about that?
So what, Dave, are your symptoms there all the time, or when do you notice the pain in your elbow?
Well, you know, it's like just like today, I have done a little shoveling in the last few days. That gets it going pretty good. I went and got one of the straps that you put around your elbow.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that does relieve the pain.
Okay.
I mean, sometimes I have to leave it on at night because it gets rubby.
That's okay. But the tennis elbow strap does help.
It does, yeah.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Are you doing any stretching for your forearm in that elbow area?
No.
Now, it's interesting. Most of the reason people get tennis elbow, all of your finger and wrist tendons actually attach at your elbow. So in order to stretch those, you actually have to incorporate your fingers and your hand. So if you put your arm straight out in front of you with your elbow fully straight and make a fist and then push your fist so your fingers are pointing down, That is how you would stretch that area.
Oh, yeah, I feel it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So it should be an easy, mild, gentle stretch. Uh-huh. It's ideal to hold, you know, stretches for 20 to 30 seconds. When you let the stretch up, your symptoms should go away. They shouldn't exacerbate your symptoms, as we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
So frequent, mild, gentle stretching throughout the day is probably a great place to start. Using a little, what I would call an ice massage.
Yeah.
Just taking a little paper cup, a Dixie cup, and filling it full of water and putting it in your freezer, and then tear the top rim off and just rubbing it in that area of pain for 5 to 7 minutes at the end of the day is another really good way to control the inflammation. And then when you do activities such as shoveling, things like that, where you know it's going to flare you up, it's a really good idea to wear your brace. Okay.
You can also think about a wrist splint, because it's actually, as Jill said, the muscles that work your wrist and finger flexors. So if you wear a wrist support that keeps your wrist from bending, you can get just a simple one at a drugstore. Mm-hmm. That also tends to help a lot with high-level activities such as shoveling.
Okay.
All right.
And then how long should I, if it doesn't go away, how long should I go, like, go think about getting some therapy or something?
Well, if you've been dealing with this for the fall, I think you can go tomorrow, today.
Yeah.
It's time, and it sounds like you've kind of treated yourself pretty well, but it sounds like you need a little bit more, kind of some specific exercises to kind of boost you along.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Thanks for calling. And let's go to Vilas County next and talk to June. Hi, June.
Good morning. Good
morning.
I'm calling on behalf of my 86-year-old husband, who has severely deteriorated left knee joint.
Mm-hmm.
He is not a good candidate for surgery, we have been told. And he uses a walker. He can't put his weight on that knee, so it's the walker helps.
Mm-hmm.
He wondered about getting a power chair, and the doctor discouraged that. He said the muscles get weaker, and you pretty soon end up where you can't do anything if you're out of the chair. My question for you is, how do we go about talking with a physical therapist who might be able to show him how to do things without doing a whole lot of further damage to that knee and thereby incurring pain?
Oh, that's a great question. You should go back to that doctor and ask him for a referral to a physical therapist.
We have to do it that way.
Yeah, I mean, you can go directly to the physical therapist, but depending upon who your insurance is with, chances are at your age it's probably Medicare, and they want a doctor's referral if they're going to get paid. So it's easiest, since you're already in the system and you already have a relationship with this doctor, to ask them for a referral to PT.
Uh-huh.
A couple other things you should think about. One is exercising in a pool. It's a great place to strengthen. To strengthen his legs, to keep him mobile, to keep him active, to keep his heart healthy, all those other things. And you can do it with putting almost no weight on his knee. It'll help maintain the strength in his legs and his hips, his mobility, all those things. It'd be a really dynamite place for him to exercise.
You mean like in a class?
In a class would be fine. Sometimes, depending upon where you live, you can go to a hotel and use their pool there and just do some walking and some stepping exercises. You could see a physical therapist who could instruct him in some things to do and who can probably tell you how to access. But classes, we have a number of classes in our pool for people. The other thing, rather than a power wheelchair, you might think about a scooter.
Mm-hmm.
Just for long distances and community mobility. If you find that your husband is staying in because he isn't comfortable or can't go long distances on his walker, rather than a power wheelchair, you can think about a scooter for community ambulation.
Does that work in the house?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
They can.
Yeah.
The other thing, speaking of your house, that a physical therapist could do is come out and do a home assessment and see if there are things around your house or a layout, things that they could add to your home environment to make things easier. There might be bars that they can put in your bathroom, things like that, where he could use his upper extremity and not have to use his lower extremity so much to transfer and things like that. So they could do a home assessment as well.
Mm-hmm. Good luck, June.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Chris in Green Bay, it's your turn next. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Larry. I was real interested in hearing the information about the Charlie horses or the cramps the one lady was dealing with. I have gone through and I am doing everything that's been mentioned, really dealing with very, very severe cramps, waking me up multiple times of the night, and even at nap time. What I discovered this spring was that my mother-in-law has always said, you need to stretch. Well, she said five toes down and five toes up. I took it to the extreme of what you do for getting ready to exercise in the gym, you know, that mm-hmm. little poster. And I just go through those exercises, and as long as I maintain that daily, I have not had any problem with cramps or even feeling like I was going to cramp.
Good for you.
If I go 2 days without it, say we have company and I don't want to lay on the living room floor, then I start to pay.
Huh, isn't that interesting?
But I can skip one day without a problem.
Okay.
But I've noticed that I feel better just in general also. But I just am amazed at the difference. I have struggled with this all of my life since puberty.
Hmm.
And
wow.
Well, good for you, and hopefully Barbara's still listening, and right. we'll give some additional support to the stretching activities.
Yeah, it's a true series of stretches. It's not just a few little calf stretches mm-hmm. or, you know,
uh-huh.
but it's your whole body.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you.
So, yeah, you know, it may be that all that stretching is improving her circulation mm-hmm. throughout mm-hmm. the system, you know, all the way back to the limbs and the spine and mm-hmm. all that stuff,
sure.
not just a simple calf stretch, not looking at it from the muscle point of view, but looking at it from the entire body point of view.
Sure.
So
yeah, that's kind of what I've decided because I feel better.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, good for you, Chris.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks
a lot
for
input.
Calling. And Brooke and Eau Claire might have something to add in that area. Hi, Brooke.
Yeah, hi. My dad's 89 years old, and he used to get terrible Charlie horses, and I don't know where he heard it from, but he takes alfalfa pills. He swears by them. If he runs out, goes out, he gets the Charlie horses back, but I was wondering if you heard anything about that.
Well, I'm from Iowa, but I can't say that I know anything about alfalfa pills. But, you know, that's one of the problems with some of those natural remedies is they're not well studied. So, sadly, we don't have a lot of scientific information about those. But you string together enough case reports like that.
That's right.
You can always give it a try.
About 5 years ago in the athletic training literature, the big thing that people were drinking to prevent cramps was pickle juice.
Pickle juice, that's right.
Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that there's really been any studies that have definitely said pickle juice is the way to go, but anecdotally, a lot of people were reporting it. So again, not well studied, but you know, you hear that it helps.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know I'd advocate it. Probably doesn't taste good.
Pickle juice?
Yeah, maybe if you mix it with some alfalfa, it'll be fine.
I don't know.
Yeah, but you know, so many of those remedies have... You know, if you go back to their core, there's some scientific basis and
right.
something in the, you know, the plant makeup that is balancing out something that's lost
right.
in the body.
Right.
So
yeah. some sort of, yeah, chemical or pH, something.
Right, right, exactly. But it's probably highly individual.
Mm. Right.
So thanks, Brooke.
Dave and Phelps, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Well, good morning. I have taken an addiction to trout fishing, and I have turned that into an irrational obsession. I normally fish six to ten hours a day.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Once I get in the water, I stay there. I don't come out for lunch mm-hmm. or anything. I've seen a couple of family doctors, and what I get is in my back on either side of the neck. I think that's called the trapezius muscle.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that gets inflamed, and they're telling me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I put cold on it, I carry a huge rag, and I keep soaking that in the trout water, and which is cold, and I drape that over my shoulders, and that helps.
Are you using a fly rod, by the way?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes. And I'm right-handed, but it doesn't seem to matter which side.
Okay.
Part of the problem is you're kind of hunched over.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also an eternal optimist. I'm thinking any second I'm going to get that big one.
Well, clearly, if you're there 10 hours a day.
Well, anyhow, the doctors recommended cold and ibuprofen. Mm-hmm. And I've always been active all my life. And nothing bothers me but this. I can split firewood for 6 hours a day. I can shovel the roofs for 6 hours a day, and nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But the fly fishing really gets to me.
Yep.
Is there any strengthening, stretching, any kind of exercise I could do to help this?
Oh, yeah, all of the above. You know, the issue with the snow shoveling and the other activities you mentioned is those are dynamic. You contract the muscle and then you relax it.
Okay.
You're moving. The problem with the fishing is, and I'm sorry to say, you're probably not catching, you know, every second. So you're doing a lot of static sitting.
You're right.
And so the muscle's working isometrically. Different kind of muscle contraction, different demand. And so I think seeing a physical therapist for a couple of visits could really help you. There are definitely some stretches you can do, and in fact, some stretches you can do while you're in your boat. For example, if you're stretching on the right side, reaching down with your right hand and grasping under the seat you're sitting on.
Or are you in a boat?
No, I'm standing.
Walking.
I'm in the water.
He's standing.
Oh, you're standing. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, silly me. Okay.
okay.
Anyway, just reaching, stretching down with your right hand and tipping your head to the left to stretch that muscle. But yeah, they can work with you on some posture issues, some stretching and some strengthening to work with those muscles to train them isometrically. A lot of it is it's very posture related.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed even if I just shrug my shoulders, it'll stretch them out. It burns like
mm-hmm.
heck, but,
yeah.
but it helps.
Yeah, you're overworking those muscles. So
can dehydration be a problem?
Sure.
Yeah. Yes, dehydration can be also.
I don't know if I drink
also.
The water you're standing in, though.
yeah.
No, too many beaver.
Yeah.
But normally, that's the other thing. I normally don't carry water with me. I hydrate before I go, but then I don't drink while I'm on the stream.
Yeah, it'd probably be good to do that, although I don't know that it would have a huge impact. But when you're talking about things such as this, every little bit seems to help. A little bit of stretching, a little bit of strengthening, some hydration.
Well, if you're 6 or 8 hours in the water without anything to drink,
yeah.
That's a long time.
That's
mm-hmm.
a long time.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Yeah, so it'll just set that muscle up for problems.
Okay, well, we'll see a therapist and try hydration and
see what happens.
Happy fishing.
Yeah, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think alfalfa pills will work.
No.
You never know.
Never know. You might think about it. Oh, boy. Lori Dine Brody and Jill Dine Nissenbaum, our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking physical therapy issues today with Lori Tyne Brody from the UW Sports Medicine Center and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum from the UW Medical School. Glad to have them along. And certainly join in if you have a question. Sue in Mountain has a question, so let's go to Sue. Hi.
Yes, hi. I have a trigger finger. It's my right hand middle finger, which can be fun sometimes. And I have problems with it locking sometimes, but I can control it most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, I have spells where I'm working on something and I can't.
Mm-hmm.
It just starts locking up in it. And so I went into the doctor and I said, it got really bad recently. Is there anything I can do about it? He wanted to give me a shot right away, and that was it. Nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no shot. Mm-hmm. And then I asked for a splint, and reluctantly he gave it to me, but he didn't really want to do that. He wanted to give me the shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I put the splint on, and so then it prevented that locking from occurring when I was working on that particular event that was causing the constant locking. I want to know, is there something else that I can do? Is there exercises? Is there anything I can do to help alleviate some of this trigger finger problems that occur?
Well, the trigger finger is really a mechanical problem that has to do with the anatomy and the mechanics of the tendons and the ligaments in your fingers.
Mm-hmm.
So the splint is usually the way people go, unless you want to go in and do a surgical repair
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. There's not a lot of middle ground for that. Most of it is activity modification, modifying how you do things using the splint and so on. Have you seen a hand therapist?
No, I haven't. And that is, you know, something I haven't even thought about.
Yeah, I'd think about that next.
Okay.
And I think they would be better suited to answer that question for you. Hands are a really specialized area in orthopedics. There are very complex structures, you know, just to be able to do the things that they need to do. Mm-hmm. So visiting with them, talking about different kinds of splints, different ways to modify your activities, it'd probably be helpful. And I'd see a certified hand specialist,
okay.
Either physical therapists or occupational therapists are certified hand therapists. So I'd see one of those.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay. And then I have one more question for you, because my father would never call in on a program like this.
Mm-hmm.
He has congestive heart failure, you know, but he's in the earlier stages of it. He's extremely overweight. He's probably in pushing 350, maybe even 400. I don't know. A lot of water weight gain. He really wants to try and do something to increase his physical activity.
Mm-hmm.
He complains about a lot of pain and stiffness, and I know he's got a bulging disc in his back.
Mm-hmm.
He was asking if it would be, he's asking me if I thought it would be a good idea for him to try one of these recumbent bikes, stationary bikes.
I'd put him in a pool first.
Well, he is doing a pool a couple of times a week.
Oh, good.
But I think he's really antsy to build a little muscle back up in his legs.
Mm-hmm.
And the pool's helping, but he'd like to do something else. And he asked me about that, and I thought, well, I don't really know. And then he does have very little muscle or very little protection over his sciatic nerve in his rear end.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I thought, putting him on a bike, I thought, I don't know if I would do that.
Yeah,
that's very
concerning. If he really wants to build strength in his legs, you can do it in a pool.
Okay.
And maybe he needs better guidance about what things to do in a pool and in what depth. He may also benefit just from a home exercise program of some things like leg lifts or some isometric exercises or some simple sit-to-stand kind of things that will help strengthen his legs. But that constant sitting, when you're in a recumbent bike, you're sitting right on your ischial tuberosities, right on your sciatic nerve, and then you have the repetitive flexion and extension of your hips and knees. It really puts a lot of traction and tension on your sciatic nerve.
Right.
It doesn't seem like a good match for him.
Right. I agree. I think the whole idea of unloading him a little bit and getting him on a bike in theory is a very good idea. But like Gloria said, I think starting, since he's already in the pool, maybe getting him some more specific exercises in the pool, as well as some functional exercises for home are probably the way to go.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the last word on that for the general public is, if you're thinking about a mode of exercise that works for you, rather than going out and buying something, you know, go to a health club. Most of them will give you a 30-day trial membership and try the different equipment there and see what you like before you go out and buy something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll second the lady with the stresses and the cramps. The cramps and stretching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what I do, and it alleviates a lot of problems.
Great.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Sue.
Sure.
And good luck to you and to your dad. Sue in Crystal Lake, Illinois. You are next. Hi, Sue.
Oh, good morning. I was wondering if you could please explain what a stress fracture in a foot is and if there's any similarities to tendonitis.
Well, a stress fracture is truly a break in the continuity of the bone, but it's caused from kind of what we'd say low load. So the load isn't very hard, but over and over and over and over use. So, you know, normally think somebody breaks their bone because they slip and fall and they land really hard. Well, this is a break in the continuity of the bone, but it's from repeated over and over use. Can it be correlated with tendonitis? Sure, because the mechanism of injury for both of those is overuse. It's too much activity and the bone can't keep up with it and doesn't remodel appropriately. Your bone is constantly breaking down and making up. It's constantly in a cycling type of phase. And when you get a stress fracture, your body just doesn't build as much bone as actually gets broken down.
Okay, so I would assume that treatment would be different for either one of these?
Treatment is different. Typically, for a stress fracture, we want to rest that area. It might need to be immobilized in a kind of little walking type of boot or a small little orthotic of some sort. For tendonitis, it would also include activity modification, but we'd also want to incorporate some stretching as well as strengthening of the tendon that's injured.
Oh, okay.
Now, once a stress fracture is healed, Certainly, stretching and strengthening of all of the structures around the actual area of stress fracture is certainly very appropriate to do.
So the thing that's in common with both those things that, that Jill alluded to is you think about the amount of load and what the tissue's supposed to do. A bone is basically loaded by weight bearing. So if you have to rest a stress fracture, you want to take the load off and thus the walking boot that you talked about. For the tendonitis, it's loaded by using the muscle. So to treat that, you progressively load the muscle. First you unload it and then you work up to loading it. So that's the thing that's common in both those treatments.
Now, interestingly, a stress fracture doesn't always show up on a plain radiograph or a standard X-ray right away. The bone actually has to start the healing process before we see it on a X-ray. So a doctor may suspect a stress fracture, may take an X-ray and it may come back negative, but they still may treat it like a stress fracture because the actual diagnosis hasn't appeared on the X-ray yet.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Sue. Thank you very much for calling. And Peter in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Peter.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I did something to my shoulder, and I don't know really what or when, but if I put my arm behind me, like try to put my hand in my back pocket, there's a lot of pain. There's pain and stiffness. And this happened, though, a couple months ago, and it's gotten better.
Uh-huh.
But it hasn't gone away, and the only thing I can think of that I might have done is stretched it or pulled it when I was using one of these long poles with a saw.
Oh, a pole saw. Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah.
That'll do it.
It sounds like you gave yourself a kind of a nasty case of rotator cuff tendonitis or bursitis.
Sure.
A pole saw, I don't know, for those of you who don't know what it is, it's a really long pole with a saw on the end, and you take a rope and you are repeatedly pulling it. They're very heavy and awkward objects, and you're trying to hold it with one hand and pull the rope with the other. So thanks to my husband, so I know what that is. Anyway, you probably gave yourself a nasty case of rotator cuff tendonitis, and it's gotten slightly better, but with continued use of it, it hasn't quite gone away. So if I were you, I would see my physical therapist and get set up on a program that specifically addresses your rotator cuff, getting rotator cuff flexible, getting it strong, getting it able to return to doing activities like that.
Right, especially overhead activities like that can really irritate your rotator cuff, so...
Yeah, and a classic symptom is not being able to reach into your back pocket.
Yep.
So that was the tip off. Or reach behind the seat of the car for people with small children,
right,
reaching
or,
back mm-hmm. to for their kids.
Right, or fasten a bra. That's a lot of complaints that a woman can't reach behind their back and fasten a bra.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in the meantime, just some gentle stretching, you know, trying to reach back to that position, but stopping before you get pain, putting some ice on it, lifting your arm straight out to the side, and straight forward up overhead for strengthening exercises, and then see somebody for some specific guidance, because if it hasn't gone away on its own completely by now, you need a little bit of help just to get you over that final hump.
All right. Good luck. Thank you, Peter. Joy in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Joy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Quick question. I'll be real quick with this. I've been doing a lot of knitting in the last year and have had no problems, and just recently I was knitting with aluminum needles that don't bend and some heavy yarn, start getting wrist problems.
Yeah.
I went online and they said to have a neutral position with your arms flat in your lap so your wrist isn't bent, but I can't see my knitting down there. So if I bend my elbow and try to keep my wrist neutral to my forearm, is that good enough to stop problems or...
That's a really good place to start. The only thing you get concerned about then is you have to hold your arms up in the air. So I guess my question is, do you have some chair or something where you can sit and actually rest your elbows elevated a little bit and keep your wrist in that neutral position and still see? Because I think that would be a really good strategy to support your elbows in that area.
Lori, I
what do you
thought
think?
It.
Yeah, I agree with Jill. If you have your elbows elevated, especially out to the side, you're going to set yourself up for some rotator cuff problems at your shoulder, especially if you have to hold your arms in that position.
Mm-hmm.
So why did you switch needles?
I was making dog's footer with big, heavy yarn.
Oh, okay. Is that it? Are you done with that activity?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, you may find that you can get away with a suboptimal posture if you go back to your previous needles. You know, maybe you love the dog, but maybe buying a sweater would be better.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Joy. And Bob in Claybanks, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having the show.
Sure.
Real quick, I like to split my own firewood, and the last couple times I've used my splitting maul, I've gotten a pain in the center of my right palm, and it doesn't prevent me from keep going, but it's a fairly intense pain, and I wondered if you might have any idea what might be causing something like that.
Does it go away when you're done?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I mean, you have all the tendons for your finger flexors run through the palm of your hand, so, and you're repeatedly hitting it, you know, whenever you hit that awl with the axe. So I expect that you're aggravating either those tendons. You have all the bones for your hand in there. You also
and it's not extremely well protected.
Yeah, and the
I wonder
nerves.
If a bicycle
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. A padded glove would be a good solution. I was trying to answer the question of what's causing it. That's always the way my brain works. What's causing it? Pounding on it, repetitive pounding on a hand, in an area, as Jill says, that is not well protected. It wasn't designed for that kind of activity.
Any exercise I could do to stretch or help that at all, or just a padded glove, you think?
Well, you know, I think, as Jill said, the problem is padding. It's not that you don't have sufficient strength or flexibility in the soft tissues. It's that you keep hitting them. So padding seems like the correct answer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks very much. And those bike gloves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they work very well.
They're nicely padded.
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
The fingers are still open, so he, you know,
yeah,
can still grip
so you can
well.
Still grip.
Yeah, yeah. And I expect, you know, some of the trade magazines may have other kinds of padded gloves for the work-related activities outdoors.
We're talking aches, pains, sprains, and strains with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, and they'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a look at the news, and we'll be back with our guests. Stay with us. Glad to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking aches and pains and sprains and strains with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Thanks for listening, and give us a call if you have a question, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And Ed in Wausau has been patiently waiting. Ed, thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for the program. In the wintertime, sidewalks up here get, you know, pretty slippery, and I got a treadmill, and the problem is I live in an older home, and I the only place for room was in my bedroom, and when I'm pounding on the treadmill, it tends to break plaster.
Oh, oh my gosh.
And I was wondering, the elliptical exerciser with the poles, is that of any value for exercise?
Yeah, it's a great way to exercise.
And it shouldn't crack the plaster.
And it shouldn't crack the plaster. Yeah, one of the nice things about it is it's non-impact. You know, your feet are fixed on the ellipticals, and they go around and around. It's not picking your leg up and impacting the ground. So it's better for a lot of people for that reason in and of itself.
Right. My husband can't tolerate running. He gets terrible shin splint type pain, and we have an elliptical at home, and he's found that he can use that very successfully. Now, we have it in our basement, so we don't have any plaster issues, but
I didn't know you had one of those.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, anyway.
She has everything.
Ed, I think you made the right choice.
Thanks for the
I think
help.
It'll be very good for you, Ed.
Thanks a lot for calling. All right, on to Pat in Waukesha. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thank you for the program.
Sure.
I am 50 years old. I've always favored my knees. When I look back, I remember, you know, even when I was young and had to get down to wash floors or whatever, that's always been my least favorite thing to do because I didn't want to get down on my knees.
Mm-hmm.
But now I have my left knee. I can't bend it beyond a certain point without extreme pain.
Okay.
I've been to a physical therapist, mm-hmm. and they thought that it was a strength and flexibility issue.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing the exercises that they gave me for, I don't know, 2 or 3 months mm-hmm. now. And it hasn't changed that.
Mm-hmm.
It has come and gone sometimes. Mm-hmm. Now, I've had it now for probably at least a month or 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. Where I have not been able to bend it, then it seems like for a short period of time, it'll be okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I can hit it. I can twist it. I can kneel on it. That doesn't hurt at all. It has no tenderness. It's not swollen. But if I pick up my leg and try to grab my foot, which is one of the stretching exercises mm-hmm. that they want, I cannot do it. It just, it's excruciating
and
when it gets to a certain point.
Where's the pain?
Behind my knee.
Behind your knee.
When I first went to the physical therapist, they suspected a ganglion cyst.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then they ruled that out.
A Baker cyst, uh-huh.
There you go. Mm-hmm. And they ruled that out. They were a little perplexed. You know, I went through like three physical therapists, mm-hmm. and then they gave me to the manager, and mm-hmm. he's the one that came up with the flexibility and the stretching.
Mm-hmm.
I also, and I don't know if it's related at all, but I also I've been told bursitis in my left hip.
Okay.
And that does ache. I exasperated it. I was working at two different jobs where I stood mm-hmm. on concrete all day,
mm-hmm.
and it's gotten a lot worse since then, and I think, you know, they think that might be
sure.
why.
Okay. Sure. Okay.
But I don't know if that the two are related at all. They just happen to be on the same side.
Okay. So it's not normal to bend your knee and get excruciating pain in back.
No,
that's
I
just,
know.
There's just something wrong with that picture.
Yeah.
And your knee won't bend all the way.
Yeah, I guess maybe it could.
Okay.
But I couldn't stand
okay.
it if it did.
All right. Well, you know? Well, my sense is that there's something blocking your motion.
Right. A mechanical block.
Yeah. Have you seen a physician?
Yeah.
And
I have.
Did you get an MRI?
Times.
Did you get an MRI?
They haven't done an MRI. They did an ultrasound. They haven't done an MRI.
Okay. Did the ultrasound show anything?
No.
Yeah,
a little arthritis.
Yeah, I'd be looking at the MRI, and I'd find a good radiologist, maybe
okay.
at a university who's
okay.
Who's done a lot of MR radiology, because this isn't a straightforward knee problem where you've had a twisting injury and you have swelling and they're pretty sure what's going on. It's a very unusual case.
I haven't ever injured it that I know of.
Right.
Blood clots run in my family.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if that's, you know, that always goes through my mind
sure.
because my dad had them, my brother had them, I've got a niece that's had them, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if that could be...
I think starting with the MRI, it sounds a little bit more mechanical in nature. You know, vascular symptoms would come on with things other than bending your knee.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And
yeah.
it sounds to me like you have some sort of mechanical block or stop, and it could be a very deep tear in your meniscus. You could have a little bony, loose body, a little chip of bone maybe back there floating around.
Maybe mm-hmm. that's why it
yeah,
doesn't
why
always hurt.
Exactly. Right. That's why it comes and goes. If it's something that's moving, then sometimes it's floating around. It's in a spot where it doesn't block your motion. Then sometimes just... by
okay.
guess and by golly, it ends up where it's actually blocking your motion. So in that case,
okay.
it would be, you know, a simple thing to resolve. So,
okay.
like I said, I'd go somewhere where there was a good MR radiologist who
How
can
do you
pick
know
the...
who's good? How well, does the layperson know who's good?
I'd go to a university. I'd go to a university hospital.
Okay. Like, were you in Madison?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then can I just do that on my own? I have fairly good insurance. I think I could probably do it insurance-wise
mm-hmm. yeah.
without a referral.
Yeah, just call your insurance company. Tell them what you want to do.
Okay. Yeah.
And in the meantime, with regards to your exercises, I would continue exercising,
mm-hmm.
but do it in a pain-free range.
Mm-hmm.
So don't go back to that
right.
point where it's excruciating. But anything
yeah,
you
don't.
Can do, yeah, anything you can do to maintain strength and flexibility through the pain-free range is very appropriate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And who am I asking for? I'm asking for what kind of radiologist?
A musculoskeletal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks, Pat. And Mary in Madison, what's on your mind?
Hello, and thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to know, what is a rotary cuff tear?
Well, it's actually your rotator cuff, and there are four muscles in your shoulder that make up what we call the rotator cuff, and they are kind of the steerers of your ball and socket joint. They kind of do the fine tuning of your shoulder every time you lift your arm overhead. So what happens when you have a rotator cuff tear is you tear part of the one of the four muscles, or all of one of the four muscles, or you'd partially tear a few of the muscles.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also get tendonitis in that. You can get degenerative tears for people who have done repetitive overhead work. And in fact, when they did MRIs, again, of people in it, or examined people at autopsy, they found that, something like 75 or 80% of people had degenerative tears of their rotator cuff, and many of them had no symptoms. So just because you tear your rotator cuff doesn't mean you necessarily have to have surgery to fix it.
But what does the tear mean?
It means that the muscle either is partially disconnected or the muscle's completely disconnected and you have kind of two ends flapping in the breeze.
Ooh, yeah, you sound good.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, your muscles, it's connected to a tendon that connects to a bone. So when the muscle contracts, it moves the bone, and that's what creates movement, moves your arm in this case. So when the muscle is torn, it can't do its job to move the arm. Now, fortunately, we were designed with other muscles that can help compensate for that. So just because you tear your rotator cuff doesn't mean you can't ever rotate or lift your shoulder. It means some of the other muscles have to pick up the slack and do the work, and they don't do it as efficiently as the rotator cuff did. But many people have normal arm function even though they have a rotator cuff tear.
Right. They don't even know they have a rotator cuff tear. They function mm-hmm. just fine.
I know it. That I have it.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks a lot. And Sarah in Cambria, your turn. Hi, Sarah.
Hello. Thank you.
Sure.
I broke my ankle back in the end of last March and I broke the little thin bone in my leg and then destabilized the joint. So mm-hmm. they did surgery and put in, some pins and mm-hmm. a little plate.
Mm-hmm.
And, I went through physical therapy and then they just told me to keep doing this stuff. And I'm doing fine as far as, walking around and doing my normal activities, but I'm still having a lot of stiffness. I have pretty full range of motion when I'm comparing to my other foot and ankle, but I'm just having this kind of general stiffness, and I'm wondering if that's to be expected, if I need to give it more time, or if there's something going on.
It's probably normal. When people break a bone, they often focus on the bone fracture. But if you have enough trauma to break a bone, you traumatize the soft tissues, too.
Yeah.
And in your case, you had a fracture that disrupted your joint, your ankle joint, the mm-hmm. syndesmosis there, and they had to come in and stabilize the joint
right.
with screws. So chances are you've had some damage to your articular cartilage, to the joint surface. Did they say anything about that?
Not really. I mean, I know that tore the ligament mm-hmm. pretty
yeah.
good mm-hmm. and things like
yeah.
that. So.
Yeah, so that all that soft tissue damage is probably what's giving you your stiffness. So
okay.
I think it's to be expected, and I think you should just continue to work through it, respect it, and try to keep moving. But I don't think it's abnormal at this point.
Is there some sort of time horizon that, if 12 months goes by and it's still mm-hmm. going on, or does it just depend?
What do you think, Jill?
Well, it'll definitely take some time. I think as long as you still continue to see some improvements, in mm-hmm. other words, less stiffness, you're definitely on the upward spiral.
Okay.
My husband broke his ankle almost a year ago to the day today, and he's also a physical therapist, and he still limps when he gets out of bed in the morning.
Okay, well, that's me, so that's good to hear.
But as he's moving around, by the time he leaves the house, he's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
So, yes, yep. and he's a year out, and he would still tell you that he has some stiffness in the morning.
Okay,
yeah.
So, well, that makes me feel better.
It's continuing to get less and less, but yeah. He still has some.
Yeah,
okay.
I would tend to tell people a minimum of 2 years
really?
For tissue
okay.
remodeling. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. And I'm glad to hear that Jill's husband's pain makes you feel better. Thanks a lot for calling. Stephen Phillips, your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I've got this thing that it seems to get worse when I'm driving. I don't know if that will help or anything. But it kind of feels like kind of like a knot underneath my shoulder blade. And it'll after time, it'll extend out, the pain will kind of extend out through the bottom of my arm and out through my hand. And I was wondering if there's some muscle in there that was causing that or cramping or?
Well, that's a very good question. The general rule of thumb is a muscle cramping, a muscle problem will not cause pain all the way down to your fingers.
Okay.
It could cause the knot underneath your shoulder blade and some pain localized in your shoulder blade and neck if it was kind of a muscle problem related to your posture during driving. Mm-hmm. My guess is it's coming from your neck to upper back from those vertebrae.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can go down into your shoulder blade and out all the way into your hand. So it may be that the position in your driving stirs up a degenerative disc or a degenerative joint, stirring up the nerve root in your neck.
So that would be something maybe to go to a chiropractor for?
You could try that. You could go to your medical doctor and get referred to a physical therapist. Physical therapists treat these kind of problems all the time. You could also try a chiropractor, either of those. But my guess is the pain is coming from your neck and not from a muscle in your upper back.
Okay. Okay, one other quick thing is my wife, when she was in her early 20s, she dislocated her shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're starting to see that more and more as we're up into our 40s, and she's starting to, it'll dislocate real easy.
Mm. Okay.
And is there any way that she can strengthen that back up, or is that more of a go and have surgery or whatever?
Well, there's certainly some strengthening exercises you could try to make up for kind of the looseness in her ligaments. That's what's happening is her ligaments, the things that are supposed to be stabilizing her shoulder are too stretched out. And so she has to use muscles to stabilize her shoulder. And there are certainly exercises that can be very helpful for that. The fact that she's having more and more dislocations, they're getting more frequent, is a little concerning, though, that she may not be a good candidate for just physical therapy. She may need more than that.
Or it could be the other direction, too, that she's not a good candidate for surgery if she's a voluntary dislocator.
Right.
So what she really needs is to be seen and evaluated by a physician at this point. I was hoping you were going to say something a little more positive, because usually once you dislocate in your teens or 20s and you make it to your 40s, chances are you're not dislocating anymore because the kinds of activities you do don't cause you to dislocate. But Jill's absolutely right. The fact that she's dislocating more and dislocating easily is really a concern in her age group. So like Jill said, there are some exercises you can do, and that might be the first route. But there are a lot of factors. Is it a multidirectional instability? Is it a unidirectional instability? Number of factors to be sorted out. So she really needs to be seen by somebody and evaluated in her specific case.
What kind of like that? Would that be like a therapist that you'd go see, or
an orthopedic surgeon?
Orthopedic surgeon.
Yeah,
and who would probably refer her to physical therapy if he or she thought physical therapy would be, you know, helpful or decrease her frequency of dislocations.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you do a little sandwich effect, and that is you get some physical therapy first to kind of get the joint stabilized and strong. Then you might have surgery, and then you go back to physical therapy afterwards.
Okay.
Okay.
Not the best news, but...
Okay. Well, yeah.
Get her in.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe you can both go and get a 2-for-1 deal.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you for calling. Brad and Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Brad.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I have a question. Once in a while I wake up, I probably average about once a month possibly, wake up and I have a sharp pain under my shoulder blade or between my shoulder blades. I don't know if it's a pinched nerve, but if I turn my head to the right or left a certain time, it just gets excruciating. Wondering if there's anything to do to prevent it or what to do when it does happen.
So only about one time a month?
Yeah.
Okay, and you don't have any neck problems or shoulder blade problems any other time?
Nope, just once in a while. Just wake up and it hurts. Feels like a pinched nerve or something.
Okay. Well, and then what do you do to get it loosened up to feel better again?
I usually deal with it all day, and hopefully the next morning it doesn't hurt.
Is that usually the case?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can't correlate it with a sleeping posture. When this happens, I'm always waking up with my head rotated one way or another. Anything like that?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, because that was my first thought, is that it was coming from your neck or upper back, and it was related to your sleeping posture, which is probably still the most likely scenario. It could be muscular, or it could be a pinched nerve. It could be either of those things related to your sleeping posture.
Or how you roll around in bed at night, while you're sleeping.
Or lack thereof. Yeah. People who toss and turn more tend to have a little bit less pain because they move more frequently than people who are in one position. When you're in one position for a long time, that's really hard on all of your joints. So if you're really tired and you're sleeping hard and you sleep in one position,
you wake up stiff.
Yeah. So, or it could be related to the activity that you did the day before. So it'd be reasonable to see a physical therapist for a one-time visit to evaluate your neck and upper back and see if there's anything about your anatomy or your posture that's predisposing you to that. Then they can talk to you about sleeping postures and things like that to relieve that. Also, if they happen to see you at a time when you're having those symptoms, and trying a little bit of traction to see if a little bit of traction on your cervical spine relieves your symptoms, then you know it's coming from a nerve from your spine, and it helps to make the diagnosis.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
Good luck. Thanks, Brad. Larry in Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh.
Hi.
Well, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
In fact, I listened to your show quite a bit, and I just happened to switch on, and I heard this program. Great show. Okay. My background briefly. I have to be 58 years young. Mm-hmm. I'm about 5'8", about 190, give or take a few pounds. And I try to work out every day for about an hour. Now, as far as workout, what I do is I cross train. In other words, every day I try to do something different. I do some free weights. I've got a trim, which I love. I do some jump roping. I do some boxing, my boxing bag, et cetera. Well, my question to your guest, a couple of things. One, I want to ask you if there's any benefit over using a treadmill versus going outside and using a track or running on the hard pavement. And secondly, one of the things I do, and I don't do this every day, periodically, is I put a backpack having about 60 pounds of loose weight in my back, and climb steps. What I have is just a 2-step ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that for an hour. You know, and
wow.
Yes. I do. Yes. And I listen to good old country western music while I do it, so I keep my rhythm.
All right.
Any advice or guidance on the exercise and what I'm doing and perhaps what I should or should not do?
Well, first of all, cross training is a wonderful idea. I think that's a really good strategy. You mentioned a lot of different things. You mentioned free weights, boxing, jump roping, the 2-step ladder. I think an important way to cross train would be to make sure you do to alternate your impact activities with some non-impact on alternate days. That might be a really good way to start. You know, the jump roping is obviously going to be high impact. The boxing may be less impact. So alternating those may be a good way to start.
Yeah, and your question about the treadmill versus running outside.
Yes.
People run on a treadmill because of the weather, because of safety, things like that. If those are concerns for you, then running on a treadmill is good. Running on the treadmill is also a nice way to cross train if you really want to control your speed. I mean, to do like interval training, if you're doing slow speed and then speeding it up, things like that. They can also be done on a track. The mechanics of running on a treadmill are a little bit different because you don't have to propel yourself forward. The treadmill is moving underneath you. So the mechanics are a little bit different. So if you're really a purist in the cross-training sense, then running outside, it's really a different activity than running on the treadmill, and you could use each one to its own advantages.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the ladder activity, I'm not in love with the stepping on the 2-step ladder with the 60 pounds because of the size of the step on the ladder. You're not able to put your entire foot sufficiently on that, and that's a lot of weight to be borne by the small muscles and bones in your feet. Sets you up for plantar fasciitis or stress fractures.
And, Larry, with that, we have to close. Thank you so much for listening from Atlanta. He listens on the Internet, so that's great. And thank you both so much for being with us. Look forward to another visit. Thank you.
Thank you. It was great.
Lori Tyne Brody, Senior Physical Therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Faculty Associate at the UW Medical School. Pleasure to have them along. And if you have some bug questions, Phil Pelletieri will be with us tomorrow. Stay with us. More on the Ideas Network.